Hello and welcome to Channel 9 Live, directly from TechEd Europe in Amsterdam. I'm Dan Fernandez, your lovely host, and three esteemed colleagues are here to talk about modern UI development. Why don't we go down the row and you guys can introduce yourselves.
Sure. Rick Barraza, I work with you in Coding for Fun, handle a lot of the design technology aspects of things, and previously I was creative director at a very large company focusing on enterprise apps.
Okay.
My name is Paul Gasmarino. I work on the Windows 8 UI platform team. I'm a PM lead there.
And my name is Tim Heuer. I'm one of the PMs on the XAML UI framework for Windows 8.
Okay, awesome. And just a reminder, folks, this is live interactive, so send us your questions via Twitter, hashtag CH9Live. Send us your questions, and we will force these guys onto the hot seat to answer any question they could possibly be asked with no comment. So I think that to kick stuff off, you all, since you're both on the Windows team, kind of how do you see the difference between application development and what's evolved for Windows 8 in terms of UI development? Certainly one key aspect has been the inclusion of different kinds of interfaces, meaning I'm talking about keyboard, mouse, and how a person interacts with an application, meaning touch, and being able to design UI elements that handle those built in.
Yeah, I think one of the driving motivations of the UI frameworks for Metro-style apps was a kind of touch-first approach. And you see that from the personalities that we've introduced as far as the animations and being able to manipulate things, as well as down at the API level where we've kind of gone away with using the term mouse and moved to this concept of everything's a pointer, right? So your finger is now a pointer, your mouse is the pointer, your stylus is a pointer. And so using those type of things from a developer standpoint to think about this touch-centric first approach and designing the system for, hey, you know, you design for touch and you get all the other things for free is one of the aspects of it. And then, you know, building the UI frameworks around those experiences, like I said, the animations as well as common components for things like direct manipulation is a concept that we have. And bubbling those up.
Can you talk about direct manipulation in case people aren't familiar with what that means? Or
Sure, do you want it?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll back up to say, when we looked at touch and we looked at what's special about touch, like why would you want to use touch? One of the things that really comes to mind when we say, what's really good about touch? It's not touch typing on the on-screen keyboard. You know what? Physical keyboards are actually better for typing than those on-screen keyboards.
Absolutely.
But one thing that really stands out that every user really appreciates about touch is scrolling, panning through content, zooming through content, and so forth. And when we thought about that, we said, why is that better? Why do people like that so much better? And it's because of the direct experience that you get. If you think about scrolling today with a mouse, if you just go through the logical steps that as a human being you go through, what do? You grab a mouse with your hand, so you move a little plastic box next to your computer that results in a little arrow on the screen moving onto another little box on the scroll bar thumb, and then you pull this thing down so that the stuff on screen moves up. And so, like, if you think through all the hoops kind of your brain has to go through to scroll on a computer today, it's actually amazing that all of us succeed at scrolling at all. And with touch, you just kind of go and just move it, and it moves. And so we thought that was kind of a centerpiece of something that touch really makes much better and that people really will want to do with touch. And so we decided to invest a lot in making that experience good. And we built a component called Direct Manipulation, which is part of the platform of Windows 8. And it's actually plumbed through. So if you use the scroll view control in XAML or if you use CSS overflow tags in HTML, those are all powered behind the scenes by Direct Manipulation. And it's the component that gives you kind of that smooth, stick-to-the-finger panning experience. It gives you inertia, boundary effects, snap points, all this kind of richness around the experience of panning and zooming and scrolling around content with your finger is kind of built into the platform through this thing called Direct Manipulation. As a developer, you just consume it using the scroll views in XAML and overflow tags in CSS. Anyway, that's kind of one example of something we did around touch. When we really thought about it, we said, hey, what's special about touch and what do we really do there?
Okay. Good answer.
Good answer, yeah.
Is there anything else, Tim?
I think, like, in, you know, oversimplified, I think direct manipulation, you can think about it as, you know, before this, the concept of if you drag your mouse, like, from left to right, as a developer, you would probably measure the delta of start and stop points, and you go, okay, if it moved a certain threshold, then I can do this operation, right? So if you think about a gaming scenario, moving a character across the screen, you know, it's moved, you know, X points over the threshold, so now I can move the character left. Versus the concept of direct manipulation is when someone takes their pointer, whether it's a mouse, finger, stylus, whatever, and touches on that character and gestures to move, that you get that immediate response of like, yes, the user intent has been, I want some immediate response of my action, whether that's panning, dragging, or whatever, that happens immediately. And building that into the framework, making it easy, was one of the goals.
Okay. And Rick?
No, I think
coming at it from somebody with more toys to play with,
yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
Is a good way to say it.
In Coding for Fun, we do focus a lot on emerging technologies, right? So I think the main input on what we've talked about here is I like direct manipulation and the shift to everything being a pointer is great. It is in a larger ecosystem, and so I just want to, we talk a lot about touch, and it's really great what you guys have done. In Coding for Fun, we do a lot with Kinect, where it's the whole Microsoft ecosystem is expanding to include a lot of different input modalities, right? And Metro-style apps are optimized for touch, right, which is great. But we continue to have gestural, we have voice input, we have so many other things, and so it's not as if Microsoft is just saying, okay, everything's about touch now, and then a year later, everything will be about this, and everything will be, you know, it's an entire ecosystem fleshing out. Metro absolutely is the star of the year, right? And I think it's really getting touch very, very good. And we continue to expand all of these input devices, right? And I think that's the main point from me there, that touch is currently the star of the show. You guys are doing a great job on it. And there are a lot of input abilities
we're
getting.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Because I think sometimes people think about touch versus touch versus mouse or touch versus keyboard. And one of the little catchphrases we used while we were developing Windows 8 early on was, let the finger be a finger, let the pen be a pen, you know,
exactly.
And it's kind of the idea about, there really are, you know, the mouse, you're not going to find a more precise pointing device, you know, for certain types of operations than a mouse. Mm-hmm. And so there really are different input devices and tools that you want to use for different cases. And, you know, so that's why we spent a lot of time making sure that mouse and keyboard work great. You know, because people definitely want to use those, and they're very valuable. And then touch was kind of the new addition to the family, really. You know, Windows 8 that we really focused on, you know, in part because when we looked at these screens and we started using them, we realized that every screen is going to be a touch screen. Because as soon as you started interacting with a touch screen, you just expect every screen to be a touch screen. In fact, I find I have like a screen that's not a touch screen at work, and all the time I go and I start touching it, and then I'm like, oh wait, that's not my touch screen. But I think we'll find that all users kind of expect every screen to be a touchscreen, pretty sure. And that's why we thought that was so important to do a good job with that.
And, yeah. And you know, the other thing that we're doing, too, is to optimize for that. If you don't have a touchscreen, right, so the kind of modern trackpad approaches so that you can still take advantage of the gestures, you know, if you have one of these kind of, touch-based trackpads that I can still do pinch and zoom and panning operations where I don't have a touch monitor with, you know, capacitive multi-point touch, but I still do have... My laptop, has this nice trackpad that I can still do those gesture manipulations for.
And what's great in that Microsoft in really pushing forward the paradigm of touch now, especially here at TechEd, right? So the focus here is much more IT pros and the enterprise, and it's gotten to there, right? So I think we represent the spread of, again, from Coding for Fun, and there's Coding for Fun, MSR, a lot of these things where we get to show, here's some of the coolest things you can do that might not be at enterprise level rollout yet, you know, but once when Windows 8 comes out, WinRT, we're seeing the tablets where it says multi-touch are at this level that it's not a one-trick pony anymore. It's here. You know, like you guys were saying, Alan Kay said, technology is anything invented after you were born, right? My 6-year-old goes up and touches a screen, and if it doesn't react, the screen's broken, right?
Yeah.
And now my 2-year-old sees us working and the crazy stuff we do there, and he goes up to a computer and he goes like this. Because his thinking, his primary interface is waving, because that's what he sees dad doing all the time at work, is waving at the computer, right? But that's not, you know, when is it ready for the enterprise? It's kind of this stamp of imprimatur, I think, this imprimatur of it's ready as we're getting to Windows 8, we're seeing these devices, we're talking about touch here, and just a couple years ago, it would have thought, oh, multi-touch, that's consumer, or that's agency, or that's high-end premium, right? These technologies are becoming more and more needed very quickly, and I think you guys tackled a lot of the heavy lifting for getting it ready for enterprise level.
So that's Metro actually apps. A really good point. When I go to events like TechEd that do happen to be more enterprise line of business applications, and these are, you know, the equivalent of, say, the Verizon or whatever your phone service is, it's the customer service representative, they have some sort of tablet device, everything's very form field entry, very data centric. their applications, they start looking at Windows 8 and it's the first time they're looking at it, and they think, maybe this isn't for us, this isn't the kind of applications we do. What is sort of the guidance that you have, and as well, you know, maybe this is specifically for Paul and Tim, but in terms of how you go about building controls and deciding what controls are for more of the, I'd say, you know, to use Rick's term, agency controls, if you will, or more just beautiful controls versus typical line of business controls where you're doing things like content validation and so on.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges we'll see is people being able to, in the enterprise, being able to shift the mindset of, you know, these new user experiences. I really think, like, you know, we had a couple years ago, we used the term, you know, RIA, Rich Internet Applications, and trying to shift the focus to user experiences and being richer. And I'm not sure how successful the enterprise has still gotten in there. You know, we're still used to seeing the data grids and, you know, the real intense data type screens. And worked with a customer a couple weeks ago that had their form took a minute to load, and it was 10 tabs with 1,000 fields on each tab. And, you know, and like, you know, what, and they were kind of asking, how would I do this in Metro? And my initial, you know, my visceral response was, you probably wouldn't. Like, you should rethink that experience. And so I still think that we're going to have to look at a lot of those experiences in the enterprise and determine, are these the best ways of doing it? And, you know, what are the new ways of, what is the new data grid? You know, what is that new paradigm? You know, to use the touch-based approach or other input type things, and, you know, voice of the future, you know, maybe is something like that as well. But I think there's still a lot of education to happen in the enterprise as far as what is optimized for that customer service representative, for that guy as you, you know, pull into the auto bay who just wants to, you know, put in your VIN number and what you're there for your service account or things like that. It was most likely on a tablet device as well. But kind of rethinking those approaches of where there's like this massive data in your face when you're really only using certain points of it.
Yeah, so that would be to Tim's point, right? We're talking the issue of design interfaces when dealing with data density, right? Because that's what we're talking about, right? So one of the things for having questions like this, or the question from Twitter, right, from RD3D, Metro UI is awesome, but what do you perceive maybe some of its weaknesses? We wouldn't frame it as a weakness myself, but this is all correlated, right? There's Metro, a lot of it is the words we're using, right? What does Metro mean? Metro is five basic principles, right? So are you talking about Metro as the principles? Are you talking about a Metro-style app, which is one instantiation of those principles specifically targeted toward touch or multi-touch across devices with low data density but very targeted results, right? The common phrase that we hear the team say, and it's a great phrase, is do one thing great. Right, that's a driving message of a Metro style app. It's not one of the core principles, but it's a driving message of this type of thing. So right now, the examples we're seeing in Metro for touch are focused on quick transaction experiences, right? But they're not focused on optimizing data dense applications, right? You can do that. There's no reason you can't have an enterprise application that's fast and fluid, right? That's authentically digital, that's putting content before Chrome, right? That's alive with motion. There's no reason that...
You memorize those, just to make sure.
Yeah. Do more with less.
Thank
you. One of the other principles.
Exactly. But
they're not going to be the same experiences that we see today.
Exactly, nor should they at a certain point.
It's not a port.
Yeah.
It's not a port.
That's the biggest point.
It's not a port. I think that's a really key concept. I mean, it's really a new time kind of for UI. It's a new UI language. It's a new UI environment. And I think people have to kind of rethink some things. You know, one of the things we've talked a lot about is people having a clear point of view with their app, you know, having a focus to what their app is doing. And I think maybe in the past, people have just kind of tacked on. I mean, anyone who's designed UI knows that every extra feature you add, every extra little doodad or thing you add does distract and does take away from the core thing people are doing with any user interface. And so I think, you know, sometimes people have gotten sloppy and just kind of thrown lots of features into UIs and so forth in a way that actually makes it harder to use, less efficient, less productive for users, no matter what the scenario is, whether they're playing a game or doing work or, you know, whatever they're doing. And so I think it is kind of a little bit of a call to action for people to say, hey, there's this fresh new, you know, starting point, there's this new environment. You can bring forward your code, you can bring forward assets, skills, things that you've done, but you also have an opportunity to reimagine those things and kind of rethink,
exactly.
How do I want, you know, what is the right way to make that kind of app work? You know, maybe it should be two apps. You know, a lot of the work we did in Windows 8 was to really allow apps to interconnect with one another in a web. And one of the principles we use is this principle called Win is One. And one aspect of that I think is really relevant for people to think about when developing applications is your app doesn't have to do every single last thing itself, because there are things like these contracts, so the share contract, for example, that allows you to kind of glue apps together to actually kind of perform a task. And so you might say, hey, I don't have to build, for example, a weird little email screen into my app to mail something. I can just use the share contract to use the mail app directly to mail the thing. And then I have that great mail experience of the mail app, you know, developed to do that. And so I think through things like that, people can really focus down their applications on the core value that they're trying to add and the core value that they're delivering, rather than kind of re-implementing and doing a mediocre job of re-implementing like 30 different things. They can do one thing really well and then kind of use contracts and things to connect up to other apps.
That's a great point. I wholeheartedly agree. We've kind of run into this personally as we've been working on working with other developers, kind of getting them over to this mindset in terms of using the contracts, right? Because I wouldn't ask the question, what does a Metro style data grid look like? I wouldn't ask that at all. You should start with the question with what function is a Metro style, or when you're assuming a data grid, what problem are you trying to solve? Because design isn't about making something look right, it's about solving a problem. And then you shine it up if you want. But design's about human-centered problem solving, right? So exactly to your point, going in and doing a search, search contracts as well, right? Are we leveraging the search contracts? Are we leveraging the contracts that are in the entire ecosystem? Simplifies what you're trying to do to get to the kernel. Now, if the problem you're trying to solve is we got to give them a very large grid of data in an Excel spreadsheet, then that's fine. That's what you should do. But don't drop it in because that's what you're used to doing. What's the problem you're trying to solve? Design a solution for that. And so there's a big difference between the design of your application and the visual style of your application, right? Similar with Metro. Metro is not just a visual style that you stamp on after the fact.
Thank you for saying that. It is definitely not just a visual style. Yeah. Some people just approach Metro as if some kind of like skin can do to stuff, and it's not. It's a set of principles. It's a set of UI patterns that you can adopt, common interactions. You know, it's something like knowing how to select stuff with the swipe gesture, knowing where to go look for commands by swiping from the edges of the screen. And then I think, you know, it's a new starting point, so we're going to see more and more patterns evolve, you know. I really don't think there's anything about a grid type of control that's in conflict with Metro style UI at all. I think I fully expect some people will develop some apps that really are about having a big grid of data, and they'll do a great job with that, you know, and they'll think about how does touch work on that. I mean, I'll tell you, I love using Excel on my touch computer now because it's so easy. I have these giant Excel tables, and I can like pan left and right and zoom and so forth. And that makes it really easy.
But that's a good point when you started talking about in terms of applications. What I wouldn't want as a power user of Excel is for the Excel team to just take that and say their customer, our people that are going to use those features. They wouldn't want to say a skinned down version of Excel, or say like a Photoshop, if you will. And I think one of the interesting things Photoshop has done is actually built different products that is the lightweight, like Photoshop Elements, that only includes a couple features versus having one that is for the subject matter experts. I mean, do you all agree, if you were going to put Excel in Metro, should it be, I don't want to say dumbed down, but reduced. I as an Excel user, and I would hope the Excel people would say, this is what our people have an expectation of our product. And that's kind of what it is. And it is this learning curve of functions and equal symbols and so on.
I guess I would say it's kind of the beginning of this new generation of Metro-style UIs. And a lot of stuff is not yet figured out. It's actually an open invitation to the whole community of people developing apps to build upon what we've started, you know, using the patterns that we've started, using the contracts, the design principles, and so forth. And I think it's going to take, you know, some time maybe for everything to kind of get fully fleshed out there. But if you look at the transition from DOS to Windows, for example, you know, there are a lot of people who said, oh gosh, I have all this super rich, powerful capability in my DOS apps. And those Windows apps are just some dumbed down, simplified, you know, apps for beginners or something. And we all know now that, you know, our Windows apps are way more, a zillion times more powerful than our DOS apps ever were. And so I think while it might seem to people, oh gosh, these Metro apps in some cases have to be lighter weight versions or something of the real desktop app, I don't think so. I think it's really just the kind of the beginning. There's some principles that we're using that I think are going to lead to some different types of designs and so forth. And you really have to reimagine, reconsider stuff. But I think that we'll find in time, you know, the kinds of rich capabilities people want, they're gonna you know, have to provide. I think people are gonna want, you know, I don't know, Excel-like apps that have, you know, the gazillion formulas and so forth inside them, for sure.
Okay, and remember, we are taking questions. Hashtag CH9Live. We are live in Amsterdam with our esteemed guests. And what I want to do is just read the next question from our friend at Twitter, RD3D, asks, as a developer, I have a slight concern that contracts like Share are initially hidden from the user. Should I provide shortcuts? So, and this is the idea of people not knowing that a feature exists. You guys want to handle this? And I'll give you my personal example. As a new user of, I have a PDF document and I want to print, I'm using the built-in PDF reader, and I assume there is no print, and that's because you have to swipe from the side, click devices, and then see that you have a printer, and then print from there. And that's something that I, as a user, had to learn. Of course, now that I know that, I know I can use that continuously. So
yeah, and I think as you start experiencing these things, right, the inverse is also true, right? You'll be going to every app and swiping up and going, where the heck's the app bar, right? If there's not one there. So I think,
right.
I think in part we still have to do our education on you know, what are the kind of the core gestures and how do you, you know, how do you get the Chrome back into some of your content, right? The charms bar is certainly one of those. The app bars for commanding is certainly another. And really driving those principles to app developers and helping them understand the, you know, those Metro principles of, you know, the, probably the most important one being content over Chrome, and removing those things out of the view and focusing on whatever the view is at that time. As far as providing shortcuts, you know, there are certain ones where the APIs do provide some invocation of those. Right now, it's our recommendation that we don't, you know, you don't replicate the charms bar in your app, because it's there. It's a part of the OS, and it's our desire to have users become familiar and expect that they can always go to the charms bar and invoke these certain things, and have the expectation that if it's available, you know, I can if there's content that's shareable, the charms bar will tell you, like, yes, you can share, and here's the type of applications you can share it to. If you can't, it'll tell you. Unfortunately, this application is not sharing anything at this time.
And that goes into that point. It goes into winning as one, because I agree completely. One, as a designer, I'd be concerned if you provide a shortcut, and then another app provides a shortcut, and another app provides a shortcut, and all your shortcuts look a little different and act a little different. We're causing fragmentation in the entire ecosystem of the app, right?
For sure,
so,
too.
If we think the same thing happened when an Xbox with Kinect, right? The first couple titles, this was a new way of interacting, and so every title needed to walk you through a 1 minute intro of, here's how you stand, here's how you get into, you know, admin mode, here's how you do this. And you can even skip that, right? So 2 weeks later, you're still trying to skip it and you can't. But now the Kinect titles are coming in, and now that people have shifted and learned the ecosystem, you get very quickly. So same thing with Windows 8. Right now, we're at the release preview, we're getting there. It's not even officially out yet, right? So we are going through a change issue. I feel for the person who asked the question, right? Because this is something that, as an environment, we're shifting. Shifting requires change, and it requires, you know, it requires some of that. But if you don't provide the shortcuts, if perhaps instead, when your app's starting off, if you're one of the day one launches, and you want to have a little, hey, here's a quick tutorial of how to use your app, let them know, swipe in, and it plugs into the ecosystem, right? But don't put a shortcut that's baked into your UI, because then you'd actually be defeating the ability of them to understand how to use the rich ecosystem right in the future.
Yeah, and I think also just be use common sense. So for example, like the Bing Maps application, one of the key features it has is search. So yes, they implement the search contract, but they actually put search in the application. And it makes sense, like if you were building a search engine, like, it's not like you have a blank app that you then have to swipe it. Like, use common sense. Like, just because we say, you know, in these features, rather than building search everything, if your application, the entire point of it is search, it should probably be in that application.
I think your point about the Kinect one is dead on, because now when you walk up to a Kinect, right, how do you start a game? You put your hand over your head, right? Like, and before, you had to learn, like, oh, I got to raise my hand. And now, like, every game, that's how you start the gesture recognition.
It'll take time, but we're moving there, right? And it is, as both of you said, it's about education, and we're focusing on that education. Yeah. But if we're going to win as one, everybody has to be invested in that. So developers, right? Microsoft's not doing all. We rely on the developer community to go out there. But if we all agree on these contracts, it will help get to that point quickly.
One of the other things that we as developers tend to forget as well is that the true end users who usually are going to get these things by buying a new machine, and they'll get what we typically refer to as this out-of-box experience, right? As developers, like, I pay my machine, you know, every week or whatever, and I don't pay attention to anything during the setup, but when my mother-in-law gets her new machine from, you know, whatever big box corporation and brings it home, she's going to power it on, and there's going to be this out-of-box experience. And one of the things that Windows has done is, in that initial kind of start experience, is really start educating the user from that point of, like, hey, here's the all about edges. Here's about swiping. If you move your mouse here, something's going to come in. And so, you know, from the power on experience, we're trying to start that education from the very, very beginning.
Yeah, definitely a good point. And again, we are live. Hashtag CH9Live. The questions keep coming in. And our next question is from Seek Technology. So you've talked about touch with Win8. What is your UI focus to help people with vision loss to be able to use Windows 8? So can you all talk about the accessibility features in Windows 8?
Sure. I mean, I'll talk a little and you can add more, I guess. There's a few different things we do around vision loss and UI. For starters, we have kind of high contrast color schemes to things, and so we've kind of built in support in all the controls and so forth for high contrast. So if you set various user settings to say, oh, I need high contrast UI, you can do that. And Metro Design by itself, actually, by default, we always adhere to certain high contrast ratios. So we never put, you know, light gray text on a slightly darker background. Like, there's a certain aspect ratio, you know, a certain contrast ratio that we respect by default, even with no special configuration at all. And then a user can set high contrast to have that, show even in greater contrast. There also are features like the magnifier that allow you to zoom the UI, and that seems done a pretty cool job if you check it out on Windows 8 with how that works and how nicely and naturally that experience feels. And then there's the narrator for people who can see even less, that will read aloud the UI to you, and there's actually been a bunch of enhancements there with the touch experience. So if you check that out, it requires a screen with more than two touch points, such as new screens that are coming out. But you can kind of move your finger around across the UI, and it kind of reads aloud to you what's going on. And there's standard gestures you can do to interact with the UI and move focus around and interact and invoke items and so forth. And so there's a lot of support kind of in the platform. There's stuff we've done just by default, and there's various settings and tools people can use to make the system more and more accessible. And as long as developers kind of use, you know, as much as you use the standard platform support, as long as you use standard controls and stuff, you get that all for free. And as a developer, if you implement your own new controls or your own new UI, you should make sure to make that UI accessible as well. And we help you do that. I'll tell you on the HTML side, maybe Tim can talk on the XAML side, but on the HTML side, there's various media queries that have been added to CSS that let you determine if you're in high contrast mode or not, so you can set the right CSS properties dynamically when that happens. And we also have very rich support for ARIA tags, so you add ARIA attributes to your UI elements, and that lets the screen readers and so forth know the name of the UI, the type of UI it is, and so forth.
I was just going to call out the point about the ARIA tags as well. Like, if you're using Visual Studio as your starting point, from one of the either the richer templates as a true starting point or as just an example, we built accessibility into those as well from the ground up. So if you file a new project, you select one of the grid templates, you'll see in HTML, you'll see all the ARIA tags for all the UI elements there. And in XAML, you'll see all the automation properties set as well. So those are good starting points to discover if you've really, as a developer, never thought about accessibility from a starting point. You know, using those as a learning point to understand what do I have to do as a developer to make sure that this is available to people that have these type of needs as well.
I think I would probably take it from a slightly different angle. The question was specifically on Windows 8, right? And both of you are highly vested, and Metro, but Metro-style apps is not the complete domain of Windows 8 proper. I mean,
sure.
Desktop is still there. We have Kinect for Windows, right? So two of the greatest thing, or two of the best things that I think Metro is bringing to this conversation is it is a forcing function that's requiring developers to step back, and as we said, not just assume a keyboard mouse input style and not just assume heavy data all the time, but stepping back and saying, how do you solve one thing well, and how do you win as one and leverage this ecosystem, right? So if you're coming that from that side, and if at times you do go over to desktop or you are, what we are seeing with Windows 8, Windows Metro apps are highly optimized for touch, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But the entire ecosystem does support and is continuing to bring in support for vision technologies, right, for multiple input modalities that are coming in. So bringing those features to the developers while at the same time trying to re-educate the developers to not just think of this, right? And also, it's not replacing this with this, you know, but you have keyboard and mouse, you have touch, you have gesture, you have voice, right? Let's focus on really solving problems in a way that represents not IT professional users, but the general public, right? These are all building blocks that are coming in to a great operating system, but we have to remember it's winning as an ecosystem completely, right? I like Metro, but at a certain point, Metro-style apps is not the sole domain of Windows 8. Windows 8 is a very rich, very powerful ecosystem that supports a lot of different modalities.
That's a good point.
Okay. You know, I think we have another question coming in here from Boxing Red Bots. I'll actually wait for in the meantime, I'll remind folks, hashtag CH9Live, we are answering your questions. We are putting these guys on the spot, including our typist. So actually, I guess while he goes there, so I think one of my favorite controls is the semantic zoom, and I think one of the challenges I have is I want to semantic zoom everything. And not knowing that it exists, I'm not sure if it's missing my touch point or not. And I think, you know, when you talk about content over Chrome, sometimes you don't know if an app supports a feature or not. So you kind of have to do these gestures to see if an app supports. Has there been any thought on doing that or giving sort of visual cues to let somebody know that something's there or not?
Well, we do have some visual cues, and some of the most obvious are like in, let me start at the most simplified in the scroll bar as an example. So the second you're in an area that scrolls and the start screen with a lot of apps installed is probably a good one. When you use your mouse and you hover over your start screen, you'll see a more traditional scroll bar. You'll see, you know, a rectangle and a thumb that you can do. Now, if I did that with my touch and I started panning, I would see a different visualization of that scroll bar. So we're hinting already that, you know, even at that most rudimentary panning thing, that there are, you know, some different hinting. Semantic zoom is one of those cases that we are investing in additional UI hinting, and you'll see it actually on the start screen as well. As if you mouse over, you'll see in the lower right-hand corner a plus minus that indicates like, hey, this has some depth to it, or you're already in the depth and this has some zoom out capabilities to that. So in the standard semantic zoom experiences in HTML and XAML, we're adding that UI hinting as well. And so you as a developer don't have to add that yourself. By using that experience and those controls, you'll get that for free, that hinting, so your users will be able to see
And
that.
You did this specifically for me,
we
right?
We did,
because
yes.
You knew in advance I would ask this question.
I resolved the Dan Fernandez bug myself.
Thank you. Close it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a great point. The other thing is semantic zoom specifically, we also have some overbounce effects that we do, and that's another cue you can use as a user. So you might notice if you try to pinch out on something that you've already pinched out as much as you can, it'll do a little like bounce gesture in
like
the UI.
You kind of hit that edge,
boundary.
Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of little subtle cues like that we've built into the UI design, the system, that kind of let you know, oh, okay, I've gotten to the end of zooming out, or I've gotten to the end of a scroll view or so forth. And that helps you with touch also to kind of get a sense of you know, where you are. And if you don't see any interactivity, if you don't see a little bounce, then you know it's not a zooming thing. You know?
Right, and I kind of love it too, just from the interactivity, it sort of gives you it feels a little alive, if you
yeah.
will, just those small visual cues.
I would think, because
sure.
you brought it up, so
yes.
as a designer, though, semantic zoom, whenever there's a new visual feature in an application, especially if it's something that has a high visceral impact, such as semantic zoom, because that just looks cool. It demos well. It shows nicely on a fast commercial. You want to see somebody holding a tablet, semantic zooming and moving around, right? But in the real world and you're actually working at it, semantic zoom is a tool just as every other tool, right? Just as we're arguing, don't plop in a data grid because that's what you're used to. Don't plop in a semantic zoom because you want to make a good impression, because somebody's going to be stuck having to use that app all the time, right? Use a semantic zoom when the content requires it. Don't use a semantic zoom when it doesn't, right? So if in your mind you want a semantic zoom on something because the content is affording that type of interaction, the developer slash designer slash whoever's responsible for conceiving that app should have put that in there, right?
It goes back to where you kind of use common sense, but you could absolutely imagine being overused quite painfully. Exactly.
You don't want to create the semantic zoom inception that I think people are like, oh, I can keep going, I can keep going.
That's a great idea, and then it loops back.
Yeah.
All right.
Just keep the top spinning, that's all I have. Keep the top spinning.
Oh, that's great. Way to ruin the movie. That's great.
Spoiler alert, come on, what's the deal with that?
It's not on video.
Okay. Sorry, was there anything else? Or if not, I'll get to our questions, because we do have questions. Just a reminder, hashtag CH9Live. We are putting the guys on the spot. And first question is, at BoxingBotRed. Oh, somebody at BoxingBotRed, and I think that's Clint over there. What things can a developer do to make their app unique when they don't have the skills a designer has?
Semantic zoom. No.
There you go. Next question. No. So from a designer, they want to build a unique experience. What can they do when they don't have a design background?
One of the things, I actually love that question, because one of the questions I hear sometimes from people is, oh gosh, do all my Metrocell apps have to look the same? And actually, no, please don't do that. Like, have the apps look different. Have them have your brand, your unique point of view to them. And we've done a lot of work in the platform, and maybe I'll talk about some on the HTML side and maybe comment on the XAML side, to make it easy for people to kind of style the apps while still retaining the kind of visual design and all the hard work that we put into the platform and with our design team to make things that look really polished and good. And so a principle we used is something we call incremental styling. And so instead of having to totally redo all the visuals of everything every time you want to change anything, instead we tried to expose every specific property of the visuals explicitly with CSS attributes and with classes. So if you use any of the Windows library for JavaScript, WinJS controls, for example, you'll actually see in the style sheet we have selectors for every single aspect of the controls. So you can select the little border that shows up with that little check mark on it when you select items, for example, and you can get that CSS selector, and you can override the color of it, or you can override the border on it, or various other treatments of it. So you can very easily kind of start with the controls and with the style sheets that we've given you. We give you a light and a dark style as a starting point. And you can do things like just change some colors or just put some backgrounds in there. You know, put a nice photographic or rich kind of background behind your app. And stuff like that is very easy to do. And all of a sudden, your app feels kind of customized to your brand, and like it has a unique point of view, even though as a developer you don't have to do a ton of work, and you don't have a lot of design skills either, because it's just kind of overriding and tweaking some of the stuff that we built in there.
I would probably push back in a different way. Not that I disagree with what you said, right? But the question, and they took it off the screen, but as a developer side of me, right?
Yeah.
Totally. Grocks what
He's
you're
like
saying.
Frosted Mini Wheats.
Yeah, exactly.
The sweet side of me says.
The sweet side. And then I flip over to the
nutritious side. Says.
Yeah, let me put on my glasses. So the designer side of me, quid pro quo. I would push back on that developer, actually, because what do you mean by unique? Do you mean unique? And as developers, as we just saw, it instantly goes down to visually unique. But as a professional designer, we're focusing on problem solving. It's what do you mean by unique? Because there's always room at the top. If unique, do you mean by unique that people will recognize it? No, you're talking about visual identity, right? Do you mean by unique that there's nothing else like it? Well, then you're talking about solution applications, right? Mm-hmm. Do you mean unique as in it's great, right? So if you want your app to be unique and you don't have the skills of a developer, I'm sorry, the honest answer is hire a designer, right? I mean, that's the answer at that point.
Yeah, I feel like it's not a new problem on that regard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So
wait, so you're not solving every problem with Windows 8? Not every problem is going to be solved?
Now, a designer will come in and we'll work out a solution to leverage what you just finished saying. But
sure.
Addressing the core problem. Absolutely. Is that Metro, to do Metro right and to do it great, that is just, that requires professional integrity, just as it does requiring a great database, just as it requires, you know. So to think that it's a silver bullet that all of a sudden, just because of Metro, you don't have to think about anything but plop it in as a visual trick, and then you're going to, no, I'm sorry, that's bad software development. It just is. If you want it to be unique and you're at a professional level, hire a professional designer to help you out. You know, you need to respect what design is doing, right? And they can come in, there's a lot of things they can do about it. The best way to be unique is to be great at what you're doing, because there's always room at the top. How many mediocre apps do you see that are simply trying to be unique in their eyes, and that just means having garish colors, right? If you want to be unique, be great, because there's always room at the top. Be great at doing one thing very, very well. Embrace the principles. You'll be unique, because most people don't put in that much effort in their software. If you put in a great amount of effort to have a great experience, you will be unique.
I think one of the earlier questions is kind of like, what are the weaknesses of Metro UI design? And I think, Paul mentioned it too just now, like, to me, one of the primary weaknesses is people just follow like the out-of-box template experiences, and like, we really don't want you to just do that. Right. And this, the same problem happened in the phone as well. Like, you know, people file a new project and, you know, publish to store, right? And all I got was this black and white, same panorama, same pivot experience. And then you started to see apps like Cocktail Flow on the phone, and they actually have a Windows 8 app now that still follow to those principles of design, but also add their own unique visual identity to make it visually unique for them, and also, you know, again, just adhere to those principles. And I think, to me, like, I just don't want to see every, I don't want to see every app in the store be the grid application template.
So the principle is content before Chrome, right? Now, it spans the spectrum of how much visceral experience do you need in that, right? If I'm just going in to check the weather, or if I'm going to check my stocks, I want to go in and out, check my bank balance, right? I don't want to see dancing monkeys everywhere, right, at a certain point. And yet, if I'm going in to really have an enjoyable session, to play a game, to play with a musical synth, right, there's a level of Chrome that supports that experience. So to put content before Chrome is not having any more Chrome than you need, right, but also not having any less. Right? If you can get by allowing them to go quick in and out very quickly, do that. Focus on solving the problem and have the amount of visuals be afforded by what problem you're trying to solve at that particular case and what level of human engagement you're expecting at that emotional level, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I guess the one thing I do want to emphasize, though, is we talk about principles and all this stuff, but, you know, I agree with the point about if you're really going to design some totally new thing, you better get a good designer and really think it through and invest a lot of time in it, because it's hard work. It takes time to actually, you know, develop a new good UI and all the right interactions and so forth. And so that's why, from a platform perspective, we did build an awful lot of capability around incrementally styling things so that you get the right interactions and behaviors and stuff. Because one of the worst things I've seen is when people actually try and code on their own something that looks like the things that we have but aren't actually using those things. And then they get all the interactions wrong. They get all the animations wrong. They get all sorts of details wrong. And
users
notice. Can we
actually talk about just animations? Because I think that's a great point where just from a platform perspective, you all have made it very performant and easy to do consistent animations. And that's one of the things where you see people trying to take objects and move them in the wrong thread in a UI thread, and then things get choppy. Just in terms of like the one level under the covers in terms of what's going on for animations, and that's available for the platform for people building applications.
Yeah, I mean you pretty much said it. It's a lot of the OS experiences that you see as far as the personality with regard to the animations are available to you as a developer in two ways. Number one, they're already tied to the controls where those personalities, where we want them to exist. So like the you know, selection gestures and the overbounce that we talked about, the semantic zoom, the panning, you know, all of those. If you're using a grid view or a list view and you have all of those, you know, you have your data in there already, you're getting all of these animations for free. Now, if I want to have my own items control of any type of kind, but I still want that same animation that the start screen has or something like that, those APIs are available to you as a developer to tie into those experiences as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. In fact, and that gets to kind of the layered approach we took with the platform. So if you use something like the grid view or list view controls, those have a bunch of animations. Like if you delete an item, there's a standard animation built in for that. But that animation is also available through the animation library. So if you're building your own control, you can call into that. Same with a lot of gestures. a lot of the touch gestures are built into the gesture recognition engine. So if you're writing your own custom control, you can call into those gestures directly, that layer of the platform. Or if you're just using the controls, then they, you know, already have all that stuff built into them. And so where possible, we've built the platform in a layered way so that kind of it gives you, you know, pay for play sort of. You know, if you're just happy with that, you know, standard grid view experience and you want groups and so forth and semantic zoom, you're kind of all set. Just use the controls. If you want to personalize the look of it to your visual identity and stuff, easy to do that. Lots of flexibility for that. If you want to then build some stuff that's custom, well, you can use some of the same building blocks we use to make those controls yourself, you know, to build it. But then, you know, progressively it becomes harder and harder, more work for you to do a really good job. And so kind of be prepared to sign up for that extra work if you're going to try and do something really custom.
Sure.
And kind of do, you know, accept the pay-for-play model of the platform.
But the one point that you did say, too, is that if you do use the standard animations in the library, you are getting the added performance of what we've already done with independent animations. So once you start veering off from that, you are taking on the ownership of making sure that you're still on the path, the fast path for independent animations, or be aware that you're off that path now and how that may affect your dependent UI at that point.
And Paul, maybe this question is specifically for you on the HTML side, because so many people are familiar or have been using jQuery UIs as one example that has a number of their animations in. And certainly we're talking about being able to use the platform features. But if they want to reuse those features for jQuery animations, does it mean they're going to have a penalty? Or what's sort of the best practices for using those animation libraries?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for people who've been doing stuff on the web, there are a number of animation libraries out there, but often those have been designed to kind of work across all browsers and all platforms of all versions, and so a lot of those do animations in JavaScript code. So they literally have little loops in them that, you know, on timers move elements. And that means all your animation is running on the UI thread itself, and it's going to be choppy. It's not going to be responsive and fast and fluid. And so in Windows 8, we've added support for a lot of CSS 2D and 3D transforms, transitions, and animations right into the runtime of HTML. And so if you take advantage of those are actually built on our direct composition system in Windows and will be always be fast and fluid. They're not running on the UI thread, so they're always kind of independent. So you want to make sure you're using the CSS transitions and animations transforms APIs to do all your animations in your HTML apps, because that's the way they'll be fast and fluid and independently composed, not blocking the UI thread. If you use the animation library APIs, those in turn call into those kind of more primitive APIs in Trident. But yeah, you'll want to give up. If you really want to have a fast, fluid app, that's one of our principles of Interstell Design, you won't want to use animation libraries that are doing all the animations in JavaScript. You just won't have that experience.
Okay. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, and see if you guys, I'll put you on the spot and see if we can just answer this one last question here from @64geo. There are very interesting technologies behind Metro and Windows 8, like WinRT, but focusing on UI, why did you choose such a 2D, minimalistic, flat style? Why not add shadow and more 3D? This is kind of the authentically digital, like there's no light sources, but which of you wants to kind of answer the Metro question?
But first, I'd like to say that looks a lot more than 140 characters.
That looks a lot more like 140 characters. Maybe they asked it twice.
I wasn't involved in, you know, in some of the guiding principles behind Metro UI, but I think there are definitely scenarios where 3D makes sense. It's not to say that we're saying that you can't have 3D or, you know, certain shadow type things in your application. I just would say that that's not one of the leading principles of it. Certainly in scenarios of like CAD and those type of applications where we start probably actually where we start getting more into the enterprise space where those things make more sense and outside of the gaming, I would say, we're done.
Okay. So just to close things.
I can't answer it in 5 seconds, but I have I wrote extensively on this topic. I'm not on the Windows team. But my views as a professional designer on is Metro a noun or a verb? So if they look that up, I have a whole essay on that.
So just to close up, things to plug. So I know you guys are giving sessions. So Rick, if you want to plug and we'll kind of work on down.
I will be plugging Dan Fernandez's session today at 5 o'clock, which I'll be co-hosting. Plug on Connect. That's 3:20, the session 3:20, 5 o'clock
3:30.
Here. Dev 3:30 on Connect, and we'll be showing off the boxing bots as well. Unless that was a spoiler alert. Sorry about that.
I'll plug the two sessions I'm giving on Friday. Friday. One is called Building Metro-Style UIs, and that's for anyone, whether you're using HTML or XAML, to build your UI. And the second session I'm giving on Friday is Building Metro-Style Apps with HTML and JavaScript. So come check both those sessions out Friday.
Cool.
And I'm giving a session today about what Metro means for .NET developers and how we, despite the mystery, how we haven't abandoned .NET or anything like that. So, yeah.
Okay, awesome. And thank you all for coming. And we'll take a break. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.